is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, February 12, 2020. I'm Buster Olney, and producing back in Bristol, Taylor Schwenk is at the door. This is the last of our offseason podcasts. We'll start up the daily podcast on Tuesday, February 18th. Looking forward to that. Well, the Mookie Betts deal is official. He and David Price will have their introductory press conference with the Dodgers today. Andrew Friedman, head of baseball operations, was on Sirius XM, and he said the Betts will be the best player he ever trades for.
You know, but when it comes to, you know, Mookie, you touched on it. You know, I think it's definitely the best player I have ever traded for, and probably I feel confident saying it's the best player I ever will trade for. And obviously with David, I have a lot of history with him. Ton of respect for him, the way he competes. And so it's going to be good to be back together with him. And you know, he's one of the best teammates I've ever been around. And so, you know, both those guys are going to add a lot, not just on the field, but also in our clubhouse as well.
We'll be talking with Tim Kurkjian about the Mookie Betts trade and so many issues around baseball that are swirling. But before that, I want to encourage you to listen to today's edition of the ESPN Daily with Mina Kimes. She's got Jeff Passan on to talk about the Astros scandal and how it affects baseball. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Team heads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kurkjian on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kurkjian covers baseball for ESPN. And man, Tim, we got a lot of stuff to get to today. How you doing?
Well, I've been here for 5 days, Buster, and I've had one conversation about baseball since I've been here. Everything else has been off-the-field stuff, sign-stealing, lawsuits, everything else. And again, big stories, understood, happy to do them. But every day it's something else to talk about, and every day it's something to talk about not things going on actually on the field.
Okay, I'm going to give you an opportunity, and I thought that's what your answer would be. I'm going to give you an opportunity to sort of talk about what you love about spring training.
Well, I love talking to a player about trying to play a new position, like Miguel Sano at first base. How are you going to do over there? I like talking to people about coming back from an injury. How does this feel? I like talking to someone who's on a new team fitting into a new clubhouse. I love seeing a rookie who is here for the first time, Jeter Downs is sitting in between J.D. Martinez and Mitch Moreland in the Red Sox clubhouse, which I just left from. That's the kind of stuff that appeals to people in spring training, and it especially appeals to me. And it's okay. I understand the importance of these stories, but I'm just not sure everyone at home is all that interested. I think they want to talk about baseball more than they want to talk about off-the-field stuff.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I love going from camp to camp, and it's kind of like going to a high school reunion, right? Hey, I haven't seen this person since last year. You know, what pitch are they working on? What are they working on their swing? Everyone's in the best shape of their life. You know, they've worked out. They've got a perfect batting average. They got a perfect ERA. There's a lot of hope, and it's a lot of fun, which is why it does feel like this spring is so different with the Astros stuff hanging over it. And we'll get to that in a moment. I want to ask you about this new playoff proposal that Major League Baseball is kicking around. It was first reported by Joel Sherman of the New York Post. By now, Tim, you've seen the details of it. It would expand the playoff field in each league from 5 to 7 teams, and then there would be this really interesting twist. I think it's interesting, where you'd have the number one seed have a first-round bye, and then 2, 3, and 4 seeds would pick their opponents on a show on the last Sunday of the regular season. As you know, around the sport, immediately to this, there was a negative reaction, including this from Trevor Bauer.
Like, who put this out without thinking of the fact that the best team in the league is going to get a 6-day layoff while we sort out this whole 3 games here and this wild card, and we're going to pick our opponent, and we're going to do this whole reality TV stuff. Meanwhile, the best team in baseball is sitting at home waiting for all this crap to transpire. God forbid someone's ace pitches 4 days before the end of the regular season and then has 10 days in between starts. Being on a routine is so important in baseball. We play for 6 months, and now you're going to say at the most critical time of the year that we're going to get 6 days in between games, and who knows how the pitching rotation lines up and all this different stuff, and that's supposed to be a benefit? That's supposed to be the best team in baseball gets this benefit? These are just some things that come off the top of my head the first time I read through the proposal. I haven't even had time to think about this. I just read it like an hour ago, and I just am so – it's frustrating, man.
And actually, Tim, he repeated a misconception about the plan that there would be additional days. A lot of the reaction that I got to this plan on Twitter yesterday was, great, we're going to expand the season. As you know, it actually wouldn't expand the season by a single day. They would do away with the tiebreakers. They would do away the play with the play-in games. They would go to a bunch of tiebreakers system that would be based on the results in the regular season. And then they would play that first wild card round in the same Monday to Thursday window that we currently have the tiebreakers and the play-ins and the wild card game. So the number one seed under the new system would still start on either a Thursday or Friday. So that whole thing about the number one seed being delayed, that's just not right. That said, and I wrote a column about this yesterday, how I like the idea. I feel like it would help to deal with the tanking problem to some degree in baseball. It would get more incentive to mid-market, small-market teams to load up. And yesterday I talked with a lot of officials of small-market, mid-market teams. Tim, they love it. They like more opportunity because right now, especially with the Dodgers and the Yankees being so well run, it's like a heavyweight going up against a 125-pound fighter. So folks with those small market, mid-market teams love this idea. How do you feel?
Well, I'm 63. I'm older than you, Buster. And yes, at first blush, I said, this sounds too radical to me. And there are parts of it that still sound too radical to me. I'm just not sure baseball should be in a March Madness kind of philosophy, and this is how we need to announce the playoffs. I understand that. And I understand, but I mostly understand what you're talking about here, and that is the more teams that have a chance to make the playoffs, the better for everyone. Now, 14 teams in the playoffs sounds like too many to me. One of the beauties of baseball is it's not the NBA with an 8 seed having no chance to win against a 1 seed, and yet we're going to play a full series there. I understand all of that also. Baseball is different. An 84-win team can beat a 107-win team in the postseason. It can't happen like that in other sports. But I'm coming around to this to some degree because I agree. The more teams that have a chance to win, the better. And maybe the Red Sox wouldn't have traded Mookie Betts if there were 7 playoff spots open instead of 5. Because they could have won one of those 7 with Mookie Betts, but they can't win one of the 5 without him. So there's so many different ways to look at this. But for the most part, I'm intrigued by it and I'm willing to listen.
I am going to be curious as we go forward to hear specific objections from Trevor Bauer and other players. Alex Wood, when I sent out a tweet yesterday, I love Alex. Alex, smart guy. He pushed back on it without having specific objections to the plan. And I'm really curious about what player objections would be because, Tim, I can't see a downside in it for players. It would only be done if people were saying, oh, this is just a money grab. And my answer was, yes, that's right. It's a business that, you know, Major League Baseball is a business that looks for ways to make money. And through this system, there would be additional TV revenue, and the players would be getting some of that. There would be more opportunities for players to be in the postseason. So I'm having a hard time identifying what the downside would be for the players. What do you think?
Well, I talked to a player yesterday, at least one, who told me I'm not in favor of this. And he said roughly what I said, and he volunteered it. I don't like the idea of anybody picking who you're going to play. That's not how baseball is supposed to work. However, he didn't seem, you know, against any other part of this proposal. And yes, there's no way around this. Everybody makes money off of this. Baseball, the networks, and the players are all going to win when there are more games that are playoff games. But again, I'm just worried a little bit, Buster, that 14 playoff teams gets us a little too close to hockey and basketball. And that was one of the great values of baseball, is that 162 games really matters, and you need to work to get to 95 wins, not 85 wins.
Well, and you have voiced an objection that I heard on Twitter a lot yesterday from fans saying they didn't like the whole, in their eyes, a gimmicky thing of having
you know, the top seeds in the wild card round pick opponents. I love that, Tim. Like, I love the idea of, you know, Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone sitting at a podium and having to explain why they chose to face the Toronto Blue Jays or the Red Sox. And there would be strategy involved in that where do you avoid the hot pitcher, the Madison Bumgarner, you know, the Jake Arrieta in a three-game series, or you just go on recent trends on which team is hot. I actually like that aspect of it. I like that in this for the same reason that, you know, a couple of years ago, the NBA first put up, had the, you know, top stars pick their all-star teams and initially was done in private. And then everyone was like, why do it in private? Let's have the fun of watching these guys pick among their peers. I want to see, you know, Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone out there explaining why they chose a particular opponent.
Right. Well, I understand the drama of it. I understand the intrigue of it, and it's going to make for great television. There's no way around that. On Sunday night, you get all those guys in a room, and on television they say, just like you said, here's why we'd rather play the Red Sox than the Twins. It's going to put them in some really uncomfortable situations. Because, Buster, how many times have we asked players over the years, who would you rather play in the next round? And they all say, I don't care who we play. It doesn't matter who we play. Now they're going to have to explain why they chose a team. Yes, that's going to cause a lot of consternation and a lot of nervous moments for executives and managers.
Yeah, they say that when you ask on the record. Then you go off the record and they fill your ear. Well, of course we'd rather play this team for this reason and this reason and this reason. And now they'd have to do it out of public. I think that's kind of fun. But as I absolutely recognize, I am in a very small minority at this point in terms of how fans feel about it. The Mookie Betts, David Price deal goes down. Tim, I think that the Mookie Betts and David are going to love playing for the Dodgers. I think not only is it make the Dodgers better for 2020, but I think Mookie Betts is going to love it to the degree that he's going to stay there. What do you think?
I think so, too. How could he not want to stay there and play there long term? They have a great team at the moment. They have a loaded farm system. They have all the money in the world. They don't have huge contracts slowing them down that they're going to have to start unloading because they've done such a good job of keeping the payroll under control. And even though Mookie Betts might end up going to free agency anyway, I think this was the move the Dodgers made, not just for 2020, but for the long-term situation. So, you know, I know so many cases. Mark McGwire goes to the Cardinals. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Never even gets to that. Resigns with St. Louis. I'm not sure it's going to happen that seamlessly, but this is a deal way beyond 2020 for the Dodgers, and I think it's going to be that way for Mookie Betts.
All right, the fallout from the sign stealing in baseball continues. The Red Sox hired Ron Renneke in an interim capacity yesterday to be their manager. You were there. You had mentioned you just talked to Ron Renneke. What was the Red Sox rationale? Because, of course, they're still under investigation for sign stealing in 2018 when Renneke was the bench coach.
Right. Well, this is why they're putting the interim there until they get the final results of the commissioner's probe on sign stealing. All sorts of things could come out of that, but it seems abundantly clear to me from what I've heard and the people I've spoken to that Ron Renneke had nothing to do with that and acknowledges that's not my style. I don't do that. I don't take part in that. But he was still there, Buster, and that's why the interim has to be there until all people are cleared and we know exactly what happened and exactly what the punishment's going to be. My guess is when it's all over, the investigation is over, they will take the interim tag off of Ron Renneke. That doesn't mean he's going to be the long-term manager there. Heim Bloom's going to pick his own guy, likely a younger guy after 1 year. So we'll have to see where this goes. But it's a fascinating and a very cumbersome situation for the Red Sox. But at least they've got a manager today. They didn't have one yesterday morning.
And on the last podcast, I explained what I heard about the investigation of the Red Sox from people familiar with the questions being asked of players, that the investigators are working very specific information, that it's not just what can you tell us, it's we hear X, Y, and Z, please fill in the blanks. And what that information is, I'm not sure. I don't have enough to report on that. But Tim, you made reference to this. It would become a really slippery slope, I think, for the commissioner's office, for the Red Sox. And Ron Renneke is, I think, a great baseball guy. But it becomes a very slippery slope if, on one hand, Alex Cora was the bench coach with the Astros in 2017, and he's kicked out of the game effectively whenever the baseball makes that decision. And then the bench coach of the 18 Red Sox, if it's determined that they were doing sign stealing, he can continue on as the manager. I get it that there are various levels of participation, but that might be a hard one for the commissioner to explain. What do you think?
Right. I totally agree. And that's why this is such a slippery slope for everyone involved. Let's not forget how revered Alex Cora was with this team, how beloved he was with the Red Sox. And I talked to all sorts of people yesterday who thought, yes, there's an outside chance if it's only a one-year suspension, they would bring back Cora for 2021. And yet others said that is not going to happen. You can't put that genie back in the bottle. It's too late for that. Either way, I think Alex Cora is going to get a chance to manage again, and I think he should. But it's a very, very, very difficult situation that the commissioner is dealing with, the Red Sox are dealing with, and everyone involved.
All right. So in the last week, we've got a lot of sound of various people addressing the sign-stealing scandal. A.J. Hinch sat down and did an interview with the Major League Baseball Network last Friday. Give a listen.
You know, it happened on my watch, and I'm not proud of that. I'll never be proud of it. I didn't like it, but I have to own it because in a leadership position, I mean, the commissioner's office made it very, very clear the GM and the manager were in position to make sure that nothing like this happened, and we fell short.
You're the manager. You're in the dugout. You have to be hearing the banging going on, correct?
Yeah, no, I heard it. I heard it. I don't think you process it right away. It's like you hear a lot of things, but I heard it.
So at some point, though, you begin to process what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And you said, obviously, you know it was wrong. The question is, why don't you step in at that point and say, guys, knock it off?
I wish I would have. I really do. I think that's a big question that I'm going to process over what's now a season-long suspension. I think it's something that I've continued to think about.
Tim, I was in Yankees camp the other day. I was over at the minor league facility. Masahiro Tanaka stopped and answered questions with reporters. And you know Tanaka. He's incredibly understated. He's always polite. We asked him several different ways about the sign-stealing scandal, and this is where it ended up. Give a listen.
Do you feel cheated out of a World Series? CC Sabathia has said that. Hal Steinbrenner has said that thought has gone through his mind. Do you feel you were cheated out of something because of what happened in 17?
Yeah, you do feel that. You do feel that.
That was through his interpreter that he answered those questions here at the back end. He nodded. Yeah, I do feel like I was cheated. Here was Marwin Gonzalez. I know you did there, Tim, in Twins camp on Tuesday. Give a listen.
I'm here to tell how I feel, and then just damn remorseful for everything that happened in 2017, everything that we did as a group, and then and like the players that were affected directly by us by doing this and some other things, and then that's what I feel the more regret, and that's what I'm remorseful. I mean, that's the part I feel more remorseful. The players that were directly affected, and then, I mean, I wish we could take it back and then do a different way, but there's nothing we can do, and I just want to move forward and then focus on the 2020 team. We have a great team, and then unfortunately this is a child for this special group of guys, and I don't want to be that way, you know. I want to focus and give my 100% effort, how I always been preparing to do for anything that I have played in the past.
How do you think this affects the legacy of that 2017 team?
Well, that's hard to say, and that's hard to speculate, because I still thinking that we have run one of the best team in the last decade, a great talent. I felt really remorseful for what happened. And then how I say, I hope that we could take it back, but there's nothing we can do now.
Yeah, and Tim, I think later today when Jim Crane meets with players with the Astros to talk about their forthcoming apologies, which was first reported by our colleague Jeff Passan, I think they ought to take a cue from what Marwin Gonzalez did yesterday, because it wasn't only the, you know, standard "I feel bad about what happened." He acknowledged that the actions of the Astros affected players on other teams, and he made reference to the fact, I heard you talk about this on SportsCenter last night, that he is reaching out to guys on other teams that he thinks were affected.
Right. He was remorseful yesterday, Buster. I was standing right next to him, and I talked to him privately before he went and spoke very briefly, and he was shaken by the whole thing, and he didn't want to just get this out of the way so he doesn't have to deal with it the rest of the spring. He did it so he would not become a distraction to the rest of his team, and he's got Kenta Maeda and Rich Hill on that Twins team. They were, of course, on the 2017 Dodgers, and he said the first thing he's going to do is go talk to those guys since they were most affected by the 2017 Astros. So I agree. What Marwin Gonzalez did yesterday, at least in my mind, should have already been done by the key members of the guys on the current Astros team. Now, the key is going to be, how are they going to present this tomorrow? Are they going to present it as a orchestrated team front where the whole team talks at the same time? Or are they going to do it individually? I'm fearful for the Astros' sake that if they just do it as a team thing, it's going to look orchestrated, it's going to look staged, it's going to look disingenuous. They better be careful. They better show that not only are they apologizing for this, but they're apologizing to the game, to what that scandal has dragged the game through, how the game has been stained. And I'll be real interested to see how the Astros handle this tomorrow.
I agree with you. I think if they do it all together, they're going to look like a chain gang. And they individually, I think, need to address these questions in the way that A.J. Hinch had the opportunity to do last Friday. Tim, I watched that as it played on the Major League Baseball Network. I thought it was terrible. On one hand, he said, yeah, I feel bad. I should have done more. I was the leader of the team. But there were so many of his answers that just felt lawyered up. And there wasn't really an acknowledgement of the damage on the game. When he was asked about, you know, the legacy of the, you know, how this people will look back on the 17 team, he said, well, everyone's going to have to make that decision for themselves. I was getting texts from executives with teams saying, what, is he kidding? Of course it taints it. It damaged the sport. And you know, when he talked about, even in that little bite you heard right there, he was like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things going on, but you're aware of it. I laughed because my feeling was, that trash can, Tim, you've been down there. It was 30 feet from where he was standing day after day after day after day. And there is some thought in baseball that the Astros continued doing some things in 2018 after Carlos Beltran was gone, after Alex Cora was gone. AJ didn't say anything in the postseason of 2018 when the Indians and the Red Sox complained about the Astros having a spy in the photographer's well. And then last fall, AJ had the temerity to make fun of the Yankees' concern about whistling. So I'm not feeling sincere remorse in his answer. I like AJ. I think he's going to manage again. I think he's a terrific manager. I thought that was awful. What did you think?
Well, I didn't think it was awful, but I thought he did just okay under very difficult circumstances. There's only so much that he could say, and he did say it was on my watch. I understand all of that. But Buster, your point about the damage to the game is the part that we are missing from our players right now, and we had better hear it from the Astros tomorrow, because they have young players like Alex Bregman, for instance. This is not his fault when older guys come to him and he's just a rookie and says, look, you're going to follow the rules here. Most young players would, but now Alex Bregman is one of the best players in the game. And I'm only singling him out because he is that good, and he's one of the faces of the game. And what he says tomorrow is going to be really important moving forward, since his greatness in the game, people follow what he has to say. And that's why everyone needs to acknowledge that, all right, maybe it didn't make me hit a home run in that at bat, but no matter what, this has really hurt the game. And we need to hear that for the Astros players tomorrow. And that will start the healing process, if at least we start with that.
Okay, last one for you. The Athletic had a story about Carlos Beltran and Alex Cora
pushing others in the clubhouse to do this sign stealing. And Tim, I read it and I felt like it was like a story about fourth grade bullies rather than a room full of adults who made choices. I know the reporters are going to reflect the perspective of those they talk to, but I got to tell you what their sources told them doesn't pass the smell test to me. The idea of Carlos Beltran and Alex Cora, and look, Alex Cora and I worked together at ESPN. He worked with you, Tim. Got to know him very well. The idea of Carlos Beltran and Alex Cora bullying everybody, I feel like it's just another layer of excuses and people trying to run from responsibility. That story didn't pass the smell test in terms of how those two guys were portrayed. What do you think?
Right. And I checked on Alex Cora this morning, and I don't need to check on him because I worked next to him for 4 years. I know who I'm dealing with here. And the people with the Red Sox told me that is not consistent with Alex Cora's personality. We know how smart he is. We know he can be cocky with how smart he is. But this thought that people are just going to follow him and go wherever he goes and do whatever he says is just not the Alex Cora way of doing things. Carlos Beltran walks into a room. This is how it's always been explained. And he sits down and says, fellas, I'm here. I've been around. You should come listen to me because I know what I'm talking about. All of which is true. But the thought that he's going to come in and just tell everyone, hey, everything I say is right. You have to do exactly what I say. And everyone's going to follow that. I'm not buying that either. So this was a very interesting story, but I need to see this in another light for sure, because I just refuse to believe that all grown players, all men are just going to do what two guys are suggesting.
Yeah, and I think you'll agree with me on this too. Yes, Carlos Beltran and Alex Cora made serious mistakes, and they're paying for those mistakes, and they're going to continue paying for those mistakes. But to put it all on these two guys, I feel like that you've got people hiding, behind anonymous quotes who are not taking responsibility for choices they made. Agree, Tim?
Totally agree. To blame two people for this when the Wall Street Journal story made it clear that it was two young interns who came up with the idea on how we're going to make this work. And yes, indeed, the players followed that course, and they shouldn't have done that. And sure, Alex and Brent and Beltran deserve the punishment they got, but to blame everything on them, that's a stretch for me.
All right, Tim. Good to talk with you. Our regular podcast starts up next week, so I'll talk to you sometime during those 5 days.
Okay, Buster. Talk to you later.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Last batch of Bleacher Tweets for the off season. And we got a special one up first. This gentleman, Cameron Black, he reached out with a very specific question. @blind_QB says, as a totally blind baseball fan, I listen to all games on the radio and I'm looking for a knowledgeable voice, but also an exciting one to listen to when it comes to play-by-play. I live in Kansas City. I'm a Royals fan, but I am looking for other exciting broadcasters. Who's your favorite radio voice in baseball today?
Yeah, and Cameron, I grew up listening to radio. My folks didn't have a television on the farm, and so I learned baseball through the radio. Look, it's like choosing among children because I'm friends with a lot of these guys, but I'd say Tom Hamilton of the Indians, who we've talked about for years. Charlie Slows, the Nationals, I think is terrific. And also my guy, Ted Leitner, doing Padre game, talking about my Padres.
Nice. Also big Charlie Slows fan over here. Montgomery Bop @MJBop24 asks, do you think the expanded playoff proposal would coincide with a move to shorten the regular season?
No. And that's, as I mentioned to Tim, I think that one of the misconceptions about the proposed changes with the playoff schedule, that it would lengthen the season, it wouldn't lengthen at all. Under the current proposal, it would just fill in that one specific window, Monday through Thursday after the end of the regular season. Look, it wouldn't surprise me if the players raised the idea of shortening the regular season. Maybe that'll be brought up in the collective bargaining agreement.
We got one from Brian Simpson. He asks, based on the volatility of relief pitchers, should my Padres trade Kirby Yates now while he has max value, or do you think he still has more seasons in him similar to 2019?
Yeah, Brian, I thought they would trade him last summer, but it was made very clear to other teams that Kirby Yates was not available.
And the Padres have kind of doubled down on him, and they're making a push this year, so I don't think they'll trade him this year unless they completely collapse in the first half.
Sanzeri at Sanzeri asks, is this one of the most bizarre off seasons you've covered? If not, what tops it? And what are the top storylines for you outside of the Astros and the Betts trade?
Yeah, it's a totally bizarre offseason. I've never seen anything like it because we've never seen any kind of fallout from other players reacting to mistakes that they feel like their peers made, and nothing will ever be like that. Some of the other big stories, I'm here in Yankees camp. Garrett Cole showing up today. Reds and Padres ramping up this offseason. All those Boris clients getting huge money. Those are the biggest stories of the offseason, I think.
All right, last one up here. Mark Keating at Mark_Keating90 asks, we all know how good the Dodgers lineup is now, but are they forgetting that after Buehler and an aging Kershaw, they don't seem to have a lot of proven starters? Seems like they forgot about pitching. I don't think they did, but what do you think?
Yeah, Mark, I would agree that they definitely have less depth. Taylor, I think they have less depth than they've had in recent seasons, but it's not like their cupboard is bare, right? I mean, David Price, even at 34, could still be a good pitcher. Julio Urias, Alex Wood, they re-signed. Dustin May, Tony Gonsolin. And we know this about the Dodgers. If they need something, they'll probably go out and make a deal for it. What do you think?
I can't really say a whole lot about the Dodgers situation, but, I mean, they've got money to spend. They'll figure it out. I'm not worried about them.
No, I think they'll be absolutely fine.
That's it for Bleacher Tweets. See you guys on Tuesday.
All right, and just a reminder, yeah, the Daily Podcast starts up again on Tuesday. My thanks today to Taylor and to Tim. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight Podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus Podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/PodCenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.